And it's Mark 15, starting from verse 16 to 32. The soldiers led Jesus away into the palace, that is, the praetorium, and called together the whole company of soldiers. They put a purple robe on him, then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him. And they began to call out to him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" Again and again they struck him on the head with a staff and spat on him. Falling on their knees, they paid homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. A certain man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way in from the country, and they forced him to carry the cross. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. It was the third hour when they crucified him. The written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified two robbers with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Christ, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross, that we may see and believe." Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him.
Well, if you've got a Bible near you, please do pick that up and turn to page 1023. Page 1023, and this is where our second reading comes from, in Mark chapter 15, verse 33 to 39. At the sixth hour, darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing near heard this, they said, "Listen, he's calling Elijah." One man ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a stick, and offered it to Jesus to drink. "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down," he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus heard this cry and saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God."
Well, if you've arrived since we started, can I add my word of welcome to Simon's? And it's especially great to be here. As some of you may know, I'm going to be taking over from Richard here at the end of the summer, and it's great to be here with you already for Easter. If you've lost a place from page 1023 of the Bibles, it would be a great help, I'm sure, if you could have that open. Death. Death. It's terrible. It's awful. 150 dead in the German Wings disaster. 150 individual tragedies. Unimaginably sad. We can't even imagine what it's like as they're even just trying to discover the DNA to try and find people's bodies. It seems so unreal. It seems so far removed, doesn't it, to us? But then it's personal. Maybe someone we know dies, and we miss them, and it hurts. And maybe you've experienced that. I have. I'm sure some of you have as well. And my mother and uncle lost early to cancer. Death, it's one of the few taboos, one of the things that we don't really talk about. You're allowed to talk about sex, you're allowed to talk about politics, but death is one of those things that we just don't want to talk about. We don't talk about it, and we certainly don't celebrate it. But at Easter time, we do. We celebrate a death, one particular death, Jesus' death. Seems a bit weird, doesn't it? It's one of those things that perhaps leaves a bit of a bitter taste in the mouth, unlike the chocolate eggs. I remember when I used to work at Clifford Chance, and when they were in the building just next doors, and we had a case, it was a death row case, and there was nothing to celebrate. We were just trying to save this guy's life. But even stranger, at Easter time, we celebrate not just any death, a horrific death. A slow, painful, excruciating death. A crucifixion, something that seems almost kind of medieval to our thinking. So horrific that Cicero said this: "These are horrors which ought to be far removed, not only from the person of a Roman citizen, but even from his thoughts and his gaze and his hearing." We're not supposed to think about it. We're not supposed to hear about it. It's supposed to be completely removed from our thinking. No other religion celebrates the death of its founder quite like this. It just seems weird, morbid. So why do it? Why celebrate Easter in this way? Why celebrate a death, Jesus' death? Well, I'm sure most of us, and certainly many of us know, but we need to hear it. We need to hear it again, so that we don't miss out on the real Easter. And here's why. And this is it. And if you remember nothing else from this talk, remember this. Jesus was rejected so that we can be accepted. Jesus was rejected so that we can be accepted. First of all, Jesus was rejected. Take a look at verse 33, sentence 33 there in the passage. Let me read it for us. "At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, 'Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani,' which means, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?'" According to the British Psychological Society, 4 in 10 of us are scared of walking around our houses, our flats at night. I don't know if you're one of those 4 in 10. I remember when I was growing up, this little pathway on the way home that was pitch black, and running through it, scared. But this darkness that we read in these two verses is even more fearful than that. It is the darkest day in history. Imagine the scene. Jesus is there and he's hanging on the cross. And suddenly it goes completely pitch black for 3 hours. At lunchtime, like now, when the sun is supposed to be there shining in the sky at its brightest. You can't even see the hand in front of your face. You can't even see the sandwiches that you're munching on now. That dark. Can you imagine it? I remember in 1999, the eclipse. In fact, I was next doors at work. And it wasn't like the rubbish one that we had a couple of weeks ago, where I didn't even know that it really had happened. As far as I could tell, it was just a little bit more grey. Welcome to British summertime. Anyway, but then in 99, it went properly dark, pitch black. And then suddenly all the lights automatically came on in the city. It was really weird when it happened. Very strange. Well, it's like that. It's as if God flips a switch and the sun is switched off for 3 hours in the middle of the day. It was the day that the world went dark. Try this experiment with me when you go home tonight, when you finally get home to wherever you live, and the first time when you open the door and you switch on the light, switch it on, and then switch it off. That is what God did this day. And he did it for 3 hours. That's what he did. Now, there are all kinds of theories as to how this happened. Dust clouds and all kinds of things. But I think the author here is less concerned with how it happened and more concerned with why it happened. Why is it then that the world went dark? Well, in the Bible, darkness is a sign. It's a sign of God's anger, of judgment. And that anger falls on Jesus as he is rejected. One of the prophets in the Old Testament called Amos says this: "In that day, declares the sovereign Lord, I will make the sun go down at noon and darken the earth in broad daylight." God is angry and Jesus is rejected. Now we need to say something here that's really important. God's anger is not like human anger. It's not like ours. He doesn't fly off the handle. He doesn't have a kind of Elton John style hissy fit or a temper tantrum. He doesn't do anything like that. It's his settled, controlled anger with everything that is wrong, that is evil in our world, because he cares about our world. That is the kind of anger that we are talking about. But this is how that anger feels for Jesus. At the end of those 3 hours, he cries out in a loud voice, my God, why? Why have you forsaken me?" Jesus is rejected by God. He's alone. He's hanging there on that cross. Not just rejected by the crowds, but rejected by his own Father. Jesus deliberately picks up on words used by one of the forerunners, the kings, King David, several hundred years before. He explains his own death by picking up on these words. He explains the darkness in a cry of utter anguish. Listen to this. He's being rejected by his Father, his own Father. God is punishing Jesus, his own Son. And so Jesus, when he hangs there, he's not faking it. He cries out and he's in real distress, physical distress, emotional distress, but most of all, spiritual distress, spiritual pain. In those moments, he suffers hell. He's rejected instead of people like us, people like you and me. He's rejected so that we don't have to be. Last Christmas, my brother found this kind of dusty box of old films, and they were films from when we were kids that my dad had taken with this old camera. And my dad had more hair, sorry Dad if you listen to this talk, and my brother and I had chubby cheeks and red wellies, and there were all the kind of fun times recorded on those films, and then also those embarrassing bits that we don't want anyone to see. But imagine that camera was on all the time. It's the film of my life, and it goes on and on and on. And I'm sure there'd be good stuff, but there'd be some bits that I wouldn't just be embarrassed about. I'd be ashamed of. I'd feel guilty about ways I've treated others, ways above all that I've treated God. Everything I've done, I've said, I've thought, all of it on a DVD. Imagine that, just on one DVD. Even the stuff that no one else knows about, but God does. And it separates me from him. But imagine there's another film in that box. And instead, it's the story of Jesus' life. It's the DVD, the film of Jesus' life. All the good stuff. None of the bad stuff. You can see it for yourself. You only need to pick up this book. You only need to pick up a Bible and read it and see Jesus in history. Jesus never, ever separated from God. Nothing to come between them. And yet on the cross, there is this amazing swap that takes place. See, my life switches to places. There's a swap that takes place. We swap places. The records swap. I'm guilty, and Jesus is innocent, and God is angry with him instead of me. It's a massive swap that takes place. I'm sure many of you know that. But this is the message of Easter. And so now God looks at me and he sees Jesus' life on that film instead of mine. He looks at his perfect life instead of mine. And Jesus did that willingly. No one forced him to do it. The Father, he could have stopped it. Jesus, he could have stopped it. Verse 35, take a look at that. People think that Jesus is asking for Elijah to rescue him. Maybe he's going to stop it. Elijah, the most famous prophet in the Old Testament. Maybe God will send him. In the movies, there's always someone who comes to rescue, isn't there? Unless it's one of those kind of French existentialist depressing movies, then no one comes to rescue. But unless it's one of those kind of films, whether it's Bond or Spider-Man or whoever it is, somebody always comes to rescue. Even in the Disney movies, even in Frozen, someone comes to the rescue. But here, they wait. They watch. What happens? Nothing. God doesn't send anyone. No one comes to rescue Jesus. Superman fights back. Jesus doesn't. Superman lives. Jesus dies. It shouldn't be, should it? But that is the message of Easter. And so, verse 37, Jesus cries out for a second time. It's loud. What's he going to say this time? What words? A final struggle, maybe? No. He breathes his last. He expires. He takes one last gasp, and he's gone. And that's how much God loves people like us. When someone loves you and they give you flowers, that's worth something, isn't it? When someone says, I love you, and gives you a ticket to the World Cup final, that's worth a little bit more, maybe, to some of us guys. When someone says, I love you, and you're unlovable, that's worth yet a bit more. But when God says, I love you, and you're unlovable, and he gives up what he loves most, his son, well, that's worth everything, isn't it? And so Jesus was rejected. And that is the message of Easter. But that's not all. Because he was rejected for a reason. Jesus was rejected so that we can be accepted. In verse 38, the camera pans to the other side, across town. And not to the cross now, but to the temple, where God met with his people in this special building behind a big fat curtain where only one religious man once a year used to go in on one day a year. And now it rips in two. Something strange happens. It rips in two, this curtain, from top to bottom. God tears up, if you like, the old religious system, and then 20, 30, 40 years later, in fact, well, he does the same to the whole temple. He rips it up. He rips the old system up and judges it because Jesus replaces it. And so now people like us can get in to heaven. People like us can be accepted. And who is the first person in the story to be accepted? Well, it's a professional, all right, but not a lawyer, not a banker. It's a professional killer, one of the men who's killed Jesus. The soldier there in verse 39, he gives Jesus the title that's normally only reserved for Caesar. He calls him Son of God, King. And it's all because of what he saw. He saw Jesus die. Jesus' death, you see, it reveals everything. He gets who Jesus is because of his death, because of the cross. King of the world. What did he see? What did he hear? 3 hours of darkness. A dignified death. the words that he said. He saw. He heard. And then he realized, surely Jesus, surely this was the Son of God. He is the King. And this man accepts Jesus. And in turn, he is accepted by Jesus. Things look very different to him now. He'll never forget it. He can't forget it, can he? If God can accept him, he can accept us, people like us too. So Jesus, he was rejected so that we can be accepted. The story moves on, I guess, and now the darkness has gone. The sun returns. It's a new dawn, a new start. There's a new day in history. There's resurrection to come. Now, maybe this soldier, he didn't grasp everything. I guess I didn't grasp everything when I started to follow Jesus. But he knew enough. Do you know enough? If you do, what's holding you back? If you don't know enough, find out more. Ask Simon, ask Claire what you can do to find out more. But maybe you've known this for years. For a long time, this is not new news to you. Well, let me encourage you if that's the case. Don't let the real Easter pass you by in all the busyness. Wonder, marvel, glory afresh at the cross. Do so this Easter. In your heart, the darkest day is in one sense the brightest day for all who've trusted in Jesus. A day of great joy and of great hope. Why not take some time out this coming Easter weekend to reflect on this and to give thanks and pray that this message would be visibly, tangibly, something that you worship Jesus for. Something that you live out in your home, in your workplace, with your friends, with your colleagues. Happy Easter.